everyone, and welcome to episode 115 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, just like every week, Spencer Howland, and I'm joined by my co-host, Manny Moraes.
Hey guys, how's it going?
So, straight up, you and my wife, and Casey, and Matt, all of you have made fun of me for the way I do that intro.
It's the funniest thing. So, to fill you guys in, just, hello everyone, we just always... Spencer doesn't like it at all.
It's like, can you imagine somebody who's been listening to the show for like 50 episodes and if I didn't start the podcast that way?
I mean, it'd be weird, but
it's like when you have a playlist that you listen to again and again and again, and like you hear a song off of that playlist and the next song isn't the next song that was on your playlist.
It'd be very alien.
It would be like, wait, doesn't this song come next? I feel like that's the same thing that would happen with the intro.
I can definitely see that.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome. So, let's get in right into this. So, welcome everybody, and let's talk some magic. So, don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 5% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good? That has no spaces. So, once again, we're not going to tell you too much about Oasis Games ourselves. We're going to let our listeners do it. This week, Marcus R. says, Oasis Games has become my number one shop for MTG. You can't beat them. Constructive criticism equals high octane gas. I think he means Oasis Games, but also, we also are high octane gas.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the best compliment I've ever received in my life, and it's not even directly, it's not even directed at me.
I love Oasis Games. You can support this podcast directly, too. If you're interested, you can go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/ccmdg. We have two new patrons this week. We have Kyle A. and Robert B. Thank you guys so much. Patreon supporters can start at $1 per month to become a patron, and goes all the way up to whatever you want to pay. And anything that you can do is appreciated for however long you can do it. So thank you so much to everybody who's supporting, and it means a lot to us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Every little bit helps. Every little bit counts. We really want to get to a place, you know, where we can, you know, go to GPs and give you full tournament reports and do all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, and like outside of that, that's a pretty long way off. I mean, that's after we get to the point where after we meet like all of our stretch goals from the patrons.
Sure. So there's a lot of business stuff in between those goals, but for me, I've got my eye on the prize.
For Manny, who currently gets no money from the Patreon in his pocket at all, imagines a world where we're making, you know, $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know, and...
and I get to go to GPs.
Yeah, and he gets to go to GPs. Whereas in reality, where we're at about $100 a month right now, that all goes back into the podcast to do things like tokens that will be coming up. New recording equipment is the biggest thing. New computer to record off of, specifically owned by the podcast, things like that. Those are all in the pipeline. And once all of the goals are met, things like, you know, sleeves and hoodies and deck boxes and things like that for you guys, that's when what Manny's talking about comes in, where we'll get to go, the Patreon will pay for us to go to GPs and stuff like that. One day, Manny.
We'll get there. I'll get there.
Yeah. So, let's talk about,
always improving.
Yeah. Hashtag always improving. How did we improve at Magic this week, and what did we get better at? You want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. So I've been playing more Magic now, probably, I think, than I have in my whole life. And it's really, I feel like it's really paying off. I feel like I'm better at Magic now than I probably ever have been.
Being on a podcast where you talk about Magic week in and week out probably didn't help at all.
That doesn't help one single bit. I'm playing as much as I can. I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. I think every week I do get a little bit better, and that is, you know, a big part of that is because of the podcast and the fans. Like, I play with a lot of our listeners. I play with you. I play with Austin Geltz. Like, it's just, I'm always playing Magic.
Yeah, and it's funny because it hasn't interfered with your life. For example, like, this Saturday we went out with our significant others, went bowling, and, like, didn't even talk about Magic one time.
No, we didn't.
We didn't talk about Magic one time. We went bowling. I got a pitcher of Red's Apple Ale to myself.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So we were at the bowling alley, and he's like, do you want to get a pitcher with me? And I was like, no, thank you. And he's like, all right, I'm still going to get one.
Yeah, and then I walk up and he actually wouldn't give it to me alone. So Manny still had to come and get a wristband.
You degenerate lush.
But yeah, so like, I think that it can be, it's pretty clear that Magic doesn't have to be your main priority. Today I'm going over to Quentin's house to play video games after I record a Magic podcast. It's all about prioritizing things. I mean, you work out, you know, 5-4 times a week.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool that you can be improving at a game that does take a lot of time.
A lot of physical inactivity.
Yeah. And still work out all the time, things like that. So for me, I played a ton of Magic also. But specifically, I played a lot of weird decks in Modern. I did some playtesting for the Pro Tour with Austin.
Oh, sweet.
He just came over. We jammed. We had to have played like 50 games.
I'm sure I played with him a little before that, probably.
Yeah. He came over, and we just... I played everything. I played like Evolutionary Leap Elves. I played... one of my favorite decks in Modern that people don't know that I actually really love is... Living End. I played a lot of Living End. I played some Jund.
Ew! Yuck! I hate that deck.
Yeah. So I just played a lot of different Modern decks, and we discussed theories about what he wants to play at the Pro Tour, what would happen if certain bannings happened, where his brain is taking him. Mm-hmm. Did a little bit of theorycrafting on like how he wants his decks to look, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just got to understand like different people's perspective in Modern a little bit better, which definitely helps you improve when you can at least talk to people. You don't always have to agree with somebody about something in Magic, but just gaining what they've gained through conversation is really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like everyone likes to tackle the game a little bit differently. I, in particular, love to play the kind of decks Tom Ross plays. I've noticed I will, like, pick up a deck and then the next day, like, he has made it famous because he's such a good player. And I really like to play as little Magic as possible. Like, I love to sit down, 6-minute, game, next match.
Okay. I didn't know that about you.
Oh, yeah.
But that's good. That's very different from me, so...
Yeah, that's why I'm always playing...
It's actually funny, though, because if I were to play a deck in Modern right now... We'll get to that later.
Okay.
We'll get to that later. Let's go to our Patreon participation for the week. So during the hashtag Always Improving segment, we invite one of our Patreon, or all of our Patreon listeners, our patrons, to submit a question or even a comment. Just any kind of participation from you about improving at Magic. This is your time to post something on the Patreon page, and we'll talk about it. So this week, Dan M. says, I took note about 4 to 6 weeks ago when Spencer was talking about how many mulligans he had taken over several weeks of matches because it was so unusually high. He mentioned he tracked the frequency of his mulligans as the number grew more and more... What is that word?
Incredulous.
Incredulous. English lesson. he would talk about it with his opponents. Not sure I remember this 100% correctly, but it doesn't really matter. This is true. It doesn't really matter. I think that it can be a dangerous trap to fall into in general. Not just for Magic. When life is dealing us bad hand over and over, it is hard not to notice, comment, or even expound on it. I've seen in business and personal life, what I have also seen is people start to, quote, own this incredulous record and think subconsciously, making it self-fulfilling. When it comes to a Magic making a decision, such as taking a mulligan or deciding you have to work yet another weekend, there's lots of opportunity to talk yourself into There's lots of opportunity to, quote, talk yourself into taking it though you really didn't. What does that mean?
Okay. So, well, I mean, you butchered that paragraph pretty good.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so what he's trying to say is, when it comes to making a decision such as taking a mulligan or deciding you have to work yet another weekend, there's lots of opportunity to, quote, talk yourself into taking it, even though you really didn't need to do that.
Oh, he's talking about the mulligan.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
And then, as he continues to say, but the string of bad luck continues and the story becomes even more amazing, for instance, like, the fact that you would have to mulligan, you know, twice a match. For every round, you know, for the last month.
He goes on to say, I'm not trying to suggest that Spencer didn't need to take every one of those mulligans, but I would caution against turning it into an ongoing story of misfortune, as your subconscious might start leaning towards the story continuing and could affect your decision. So this is a great thing that I believe I talked about during the process of how I didn't want this to become an ongoing story.
Right.
And how it was frustrating me even more that I was becoming frustrated.
Yeah.
It was, I hope that I made it very clear to the listeners that it was like a string of like one lander, one lander, one lander, six lander, one lander, six lander, one lander. A lot of those hands where it's just like, this isn't,
you're just like,
this isn't actually mathematically possible that I would get this many one landers or no landers. Like,
yeah.
And it, I mean, the streak is very much over. Like,
yeah, it was months ago.
It was from round something of the Pro Tour.
Oh, okay.
Until about 2 weeks after the Pro Tour, where I think that like my win percentage like dipped into like, I think like the 30s. It was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It was really bad. And the thing is that the only reason that it frustrated me the most is because I don't like feeling frustrated during matches of Magic. And what Dan is talking about is very true.
Well, and then going back to what he was saying in the original statement, I think that's such sound, solid advice. Like, instead of saying, you know, oh, poor me, and continuing to propagate that kind of thinking and that kind of thing, like, it's best to, like, just ignore it, really. Just move past it as fast as you can. Don't even mention it to anybody.
Yeah. And Manny, if you know anybody that hates blaming luck over anybody, it's probably me, right?
Yeah, and Casey as well. He doesn't. No, I've seen him get, like, terrible, terrible hands and just not say a word and just be like, I'll keep it. It's like, I mean, because, you know, the alternative was worse, but he just, that guy doesn't complain.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, is that Casey and I do that a lot together, too. It's it's all a matter of, like, we'd rather be wrong than be unlucky.
Sure.
because we can't fix being unlucky.
Yeah.
That's not something you can fix. And what Dan is saying is really important. And so there's a player that is currently banned from Magic the Gathering that we won't go into names here, but we, Casey and I, and have witnessed many times, and I actually witnessed this in the semifinals of a PTQ. He mulliganed away three perfectly great hands, going to four, and complained, oh, I'm so unlucky. Just like,
yeah.
And I'm standing behind him going,
that was hot. Or like, that was good enough.
This person has top eighted like 17 PTQs and never played in the finals.
What?
Yeah.
Explain.
He would self-sabotage because the story was important to him.
Oh, I see. So continuing the, oh man, it happened again.
Doing exactly what Dan is talking about, where I'm like, and I'm like, dude, why did you mulligan that? He's like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. That was a one-lander. I'm like, no, dude, you had like three lands, four spells on curve.
Yeah.
Did you even look at your hand? Like, and it's so important to note that, like, this is a very extreme example, right? Like, nobody in their right mind would do this. But there's a lot of times where we want to express to the world our frustrations, and our frustrations get a little bit better if we can, like, make them bigger, right? Yeah. People embellish all the time.
Right.
And the important thing is that embellishing your bad luck really doesn't help you in Magic.
No, for whatever reason, a lot of people, like, it makes them feel better. Like,
yeah.
I mean, variance is a huge part of the game, and anyone who has played a decent amount of Magic knows that. And that's something you accept early on. You go, all right, sometimes, you know what, I am going to get three no-land mulligans. Like, that is going to happen to you at some point in the game.
Yeah, and I think that I hope that to the listeners, you can understand that the reason that I was frustrated in telling the story is because I was frustrated how frustrated I was. Because I don't like feeling that way. I don't feel like Magic's getting me. I'd rather feel like, Spencer, you're a dum-dum. What'd you do wrong?
Sure.
Like, it's a way better mindset to be. And as Casey and Matt have told on the podcast before, I do it to a fault. I'll oftentimes, like, I could have done nothing to win a match of Magic, and I'll just, like, go way too deep on, like, the lands in which I played in order and things like that.
Sure.
So there's a fine line to stand on that you have to be on. But what Dan's saying is very true. And yeah, that's, I let it become a story.
Right.
Because you know what? In the end, I know that we all, like, the only reason for a bad beat story is the fact that it's a story.
Right.
That's it. And Casey says it the best all the time. He talks about how, I mean, in the end, like,
yeah,
the only thing you're doing is telling a story,
right? I'm not super in love when I lose a match and then someone asks what happened and I go, oh, I didn't draw any lands and you won, and that's usually like as far as I like to go into a story.
Yeah, and there are some people that, you know, when you see their Twitter accounts, like, it's basically all bad beat stories, and don't be that guy. Like, The story is not as fun as actually just getting better. Because getting better and winning matches of Magic is really fun.
So. Yeah, I'd much rather tell somebody that I won as opposed to, like, some story. Now I lost.
Some horrific story.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so thank you so much for your participation this week, Dan. If you have anything that you'd like to talk about during our hashtag Always Improving segment, and you are a patron of the show, every week I'll be posting a thread where you can comment on it, and we'll talk about one of them every week. Or we'll go back in history, if there's a buildup of them. So that's just one of the benefits you get from supporting the show. All right, where are we at now?
Next, card of the week.
Announcements, none. No announcements.
Okay. All right. On to card of the week.
Well, it's actually weird, right? We've had
Oh, no. You know what? We do have an announcement.
Don't hit the table. The microphone's right there.
I just get so excited about giving away cards. I'm like Oprah. Okay. So the Patreon listener who won the Polluted Delta.
What about...
They still haven't come forward.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you definitely need to come forward to get your prize.
Yeah, you need to let us know. We want to mail it to you. We want to get that to you.
Well, that's an announcement.
It's the big one.
You need to throw the guy under the bus.
I mean, I want him to get it. I'm giving it to him.
No, I think that it's important to note that we don't have any announcements because if you think about it, like, so a lot of them have been good, but that means the podcast is getting back to that point of stability that we had for so long with... either myself and Matt and Casey or myself, Matt and Quentin.
Sure.
Or myself, Casey and Quentin, sorry.
Or like me and you.
Yeah, and now I feel like we're at a really good point and the fact that there's not any news behind the scenes on the show, like...
I mean, I think we've listened to a lot of the listeners' input and we're gonna refocus on power rankings and we're gonna make sure those are as detailed as you want them and we're gonna...
Yeah, I guess that's kind of an announcement. Yeah. So there's no power rankings this week. As like
nothing,
there's split formats. We don't do during weeks like this where it's like there's two split format tournaments. I don't really want to adjust the power rankings to fit in like the 7-1 decks and the decks that did well. I'd rather just talk about the decks in the format that we want to talk about, which this week we'll talk about standard decks. But no power rankings. But when we do go back to power rankings, we're gonna go back to the old way that I used to do with Quentin and Casey. The reason for this is we got a lot of feedback. One person named Eric, who I value his opinion a lot, as he's somebody who has given me very good feedback about myself on the podcast, has said, you know, you guys sound fanboyish on the new Power Rankings segment. And, Manny and I, after Power Rankings 2 weeks ago, were like, man, we did not actually, like, provide a lot of content during those rankings. So I guess that's kind of an announcement. But I think that it's great to see the stability coming back to the podcast and just... sitting in a room with you and talking about Magic every week has like become one of the highlights of my week. When I write the show notes on Thursday,
thank you.
When I write the show notes on Thursday, I'm like, oh man, I just want to do the show right now.
Yeah, I was thinking that a few days ago too.
For Monday.
It's so much fun.
It is. It's the greatest. We enjoy this a lot. But let's talk about card of the week. So come on, we actually don't have a card of the week because Manny and I are like fighting about it.
Yeah. Well, it should be Windswept Heath.
You just say that because you want to give out a Windswept Heath.
Yeah, but I mean, Abzan Aggro is incredible. It's good.
I want to give out 4-foil Siege Rhinos.
Oh, that's not nearly as good. Well, I mean, Siege Rhino is like barely modern playable. And once it rotates, that card's going to be worth like nothing.
All right, should we give out a sweet, sweet prize?
Like what?
All right, let's look. So,
okay.
The deck that won the Invitational by Caleb... had 2 Dromoka's Commands and 4 Windswept Heath. So let's give out 2 Dromoka's Commands and 1 Windswept Heath.
Sure.
We'll call it a double card of the week.
Okay.
And let's talk about why this is the card. Why are we trying to give out all these Abzan cards?
Because it's on top. It's good. It's amazing.
So like
Roger B, our new Patreon, he plays it and he plays it well. He
did it's really Robert.
Good. Is it?
I'm pretty sure it's Robert.
Is it Robert?
Oh. Pretty sure it's Robert.
It is Robert.
I got your back, Robert. But let's look at something. So let's just look at... So here's the open. Let's look at the top end of the open. 3 of the top 4, Abzan aggro. Which, by the way, this is not an aggro deck. Stop calling it that. It's Abzan midrange. Shut up.
What? Where does it get midrangey?
There's 5 mana 3/4s that give you card advantage in the deck. And Gideon Ally of Zendikar.
It's
and Siege Rhino.
Whatever. It's the aggressive deck in a and, super slow format.
And hold, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
There's a darker red deck in this format.
Barely. Look, I can't deal with you. Continue.
Warden of the First Tree is the replacement for Fleeceman Lion, right?
Right.
And Fleeceman Lion is the most mid-range card of all time.
I mean, it was good. Okay, so yes, it is a mid-range card, but it is also a very fast, very aggressive card, right?
That's what defines mid-range. It's cards that play both sides of the field, like Warden of the First Tree, which you can play on turn one.
Make it
a 3-3
ideally,
on turn two.
Ideally,
and then
right?
Late in the game, you can put a bunch of counters on
hold
it.
Hold on, guy.
What
hold
else
on.
Is the definition
like,
of mid-range? Because
like your nut draw, right, is you turn one Warden, turn two make it bigger, turn three Anafenza, turn four Rhino, and like just murder
you're
everything.
You're telling me that you think that a 3-mana 4/4 is aggro and not mid-range?
Yes.
But that's the definition of a mid-range deck.
All right. Fine. I just think because it's a little bit slower doesn't make it not an aggro deck.
You're blurring the lines here, dude. You're blurring the lines. What does Blood Red Elf belong in aggro decks or mid-range decks? Obviously, the answer to that is mid-range decks. Putrid Leech is a 2-mana 2/2 that you can pay 2 life to make a 4/4. Very aggressive card, right?
Right.
Didn't see play in any aggressive decks. The deck that it did see play in was Jund mid-range. This Abzan aggro deck is just the Jund mid-range deck from Alara, dude. You've got your Warden of the First Trees, which are your Putrid Leeches. You've got your Anafenzas that are like your Sprouting Thranaxes. I don't know. Something like that. Your Great Stable Sags. Your Bloodbred Elves, which are your Siege Rhinos. Like, this deck is just the same deck it's been for years. It's a mid-range deck. The only reason it's called Abzan aggro is because there was a much slower version of it last year.
Sure. All right. I'll accept that.
All right.
I would call that true Abzan mid-range.
But what if neither of them had ever existed? What if this was a brand new deck? What would you call it?
I don't know. It's like, it's really in between there, right? Because it's not...
That's the definition of a mid-range deck.
No, I mean, like... Okay, that's not what I mean. I mean, it's in between... I don't mean being a slow deck and a fast deck. I mean, it's in between being, like, a very highly aggressive deck and then, like, almost a mid-range deck.
I'm glad that we had this discussion.
Why?
Because it's fun.
All right.
I think that if the Abzan control had never existed, no one would be calling this Abzan aggro. This would be called Abzan midrange.
I mean, come on, the deck plays like Heir of the Wilds. That's trying to
get
in. Yeah,
but that's just because there's no good 2-drops.
That's true.
Sure.
Sure.
Oh, man. Doesn't it feel good to talk about Magic?
Always, but my heart is pounding because I'm so angry that you don't agree with me.
It's an aggressive mid-range deck.
I mean, is it so, like, so far, I just feel like it's so...
Like, this deck plays, like, 5-drops and...
It plays 2 5-drops. Let's get real here.
Some of these decks were playing, doesn't he have... He doesn't. So this is Steve Rubin's deck. I'm pretty sure that Caleb has, like, yeah, Planar Outburst out of the sideboard. And 4-mana 2, like, -2/-2 effects.
Well, I mean, tokens is a thing.
I'm just saying, like, it's a mid-range deck.
I mean, I think it can be a mid-range deck.
No, it can be the... Okay, so all right, let's...
You know what? I'll concede
no,
because
hold
of the
on.
Wingmates. All right,
hold
the Wingmates,
on. No, no,
sure.
No. Let's end this argument.
Okay.
When you are playing against control, are you the aggressive deck or the control deck?
The aggressive deck.
When you're playing against aggro, are you the aggressive deck or the control deck?
The controlling deck. Yeah. Okay, fine.
That was a fun conversation.
Why did you do that 5 minutes ago and save us a buttload of time?
Oh, man. Well, so what's the card of the week? What are we doing here?
You decided. You, like, forgot.
No,
one win, swept Heath, two Drabokas commands.
I just wanted to confirm.
Oh, confirm.
All right,
cool. Let's give them out.
All right, let's do this.
Who's going to get it?
And the winner of this week's Cards of the Week is...
You said not to hit the table.
Edward Z. Thank you so much for being a patron of the show, Edward. If you will... Or Eduardo, sorry.
Eduardo, yeah.
Eduardo Z. Eduardo, if you will send us a message either on Patreon or whatever, just to confirm, we'll hook you up with some sweet cards.
Yep.
So, yeah, well, obviously, we're pretty passionate about Abzan, because we just got, like, a five-minute discussion about the deck. So, obviously, there's no power rankings, so let's just talk about what we would play and why, and then if we have anything to say about Standard, we can say it.
Okay. This week, I would probably play Mardu.
Mardu.
Yeah.
Mardu midrange.
Yes.
Okay.
It looks like I love those colors. I love what you can do in those colors. The deck looks sweet. I am sick of playing Abzan, even though I love it, and I would probably play it a lot of the time, but I'm ready for something new.
Teemer Black.
Surprise, surprise.
It's pretty big on Teemer Black right now. But Teemer Black. I play Teemer Black.
Why?
Because Black gives you Murderous Cut and gives you things that solve the issues that the Teemer deck might have.
What? So playing regular Teemer, what is it that you feel like it's lacking that Black brings to the table?
Things to kill Mantis Rider with.
Oh, sure.
And that's it.
That's all?
Yeah.
All right.
Things to kill dragons.
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons that you want to play something along the lines of, like, a lot of Ashcloud Phoenixes. Because if you can get them down on time, then, like, they're insane against things like Mantis Rider.
Gotcha.
Unless they tempo you out and, like, shock it. But,
right.
I mean, even at that point, like, you can usually win the game through there. But, yeah. So, I would be playing Teemer Black. What would you play in Modern? Oh, let's talk about what we would both play in Modern, because I think we're on the same deck.
Okay. Are we? I hope so.
I would be playing green,
no, red. No, green, red, aggro. What did you just... You asked me. I wanted to go first. Now it looks like I'm copying you. I own it in paper. Green, red, aggro.
I would play green, red, aggro in Modern right now.
That deck is so sweet.
Yeah.
Turn one, experiment one into turn two, like, Nakadal and Kurt Ape is so sweet.
My list has two Jarmai Raids and a Dismember, but...
Yeah, mine does too.
Oh, do you have those now?
Oh, no. Actually, I have the Domries, but not the Dismember. I'm still running Vines.
Yeah, I just cut down to one Mutagen Earth and one Dismember, so I still have two Vines of Aethwood.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I feel like Vines is insanely necessary against Twin, and then also Dismember. Like, I have... Usually, I just run them over, but the games that I do lose is because they combo off, and I just can't do anything. I'm stuck there with my thumb up my butt. Well, that's what it feels like. What? It's just like, oh, wow, split what? Pestermite? Okay.
Yeah.
Twin?
Okay. The games I play with the deck, that's just like, I don't think the format is ready for that deck.
For which one?
For green-red.
What do you mean it's not ready?
I don't think it's ready. I don't think people are prepared to play against the deck. I think they all lose to it.
If it feels like if your opponent doesn't draw Anger of the Gods, you just get a freebie. You're just like sweet.
Like, so many of the times they're like looking at their removal spells and they're like... Why did you get to play a Burning Tree Emissary?
Yeah, like, they're just like, what?
What do you mean, experiment one wild Nakadal Flint of Borgo?
Yeah.
What just happened to me?
It's insane.
So, yeah. But anyway, you've got, like, Atarkus Commands, Lightning Bolts. You know, I just like it. I like it a lot. It's I like everything about the deck. The number of times where, like, you get to go experiment one Burning Tree Emissary, Flint of Borg, Tarmogoyf is like... Oh, well, that was a fun game of Magic.
Yeah, your opponent's always just like, oh, that's a lot. It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and then you just start attacking with, like, Goreclan Rampagers and Atarkus Commands in your hand, or, like, in a Become Immense, and they're not ready.
Yeah, and the Mutagenic Growths are really just so awesome. They're so good against Lightning Bolt. They're, like, amazing. I wouldn't trade that card for anything else. And the fact, the Goreclan Rampagers Blood Rush is so clutch against Spellkite. It feels like a blowout.
It's because it is.
Right.
So what did you play in Legacy?
Legacy, some kind of Grixis variant. I'm not keeping up with it too much right now, just because I haven't been able to find a whole lot of people playing it at the moment. But I would probably play Grixis. I love those colors. I love what they do. I love Kulgan's Command.
I really... So, Matt and I had to cancel today because of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And last night I texted him. I was like,
"Oh yeah, hey, we're having a huge, huge like day, 2 day storm here in Utah."
So we had to cancel today, but I really want to play the Punishing Loam deck.
It looks sweet. Anytime you have Punishing Fire, Life from the Loam, and just other gross things, it gets degenerate.
Yeah, like,
it feels amazing from your end.
Well, let's play some Sneak Deep for Ditch, since we have no Power Rankings this week. We're going to go with a list posted in our Facebook group by one of our listeners, Paul, who top-8ed his first GPT ever played in this weekend, so congratulations to him. And let's pull it up. All right, you ready for this?
Yes.
So what is Sneak Deep for Ditch?
So this game is you're deciding with other people whether, you know, it's a snap keep, it's just a regular keep, or if that hand is completely unplayable.
Yeah, so it's whether you would snap keep it, or ditch it. So our first hand we have is Stomping Ground, Monastery Swift Spear, Searing Blaze, Atarka's Command, Boros Charm, Lava Spike, Lightning Helix. This is a snap ditch for me.
I don't love it.
I wouldn't imagine keeping this hand.
Yeah, with Boros Charm and Lightning Helix, that really puts a wrench in your works.
Yeah, and like, you have a lot of work to do.
Theoretically, right, you turn one Swift Spear, swing one. Gives you another draw step because you can cast Lava Spike, but after that, you're so tempoed out, there's not a lot coming back. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't keep it.
Yeah, I think you're a pretty big trouble with this hand. You know, you're asking for too much of your deck. And with Paul's deck, and let's actually go back and like kind of read it to the listeners to give them an idea of, so it's a burn deck, as you guys can tell, but it's 4 Eidolon, 2 Grim Lavamancer, 4 Swift Spear, 2 Zergo, 4 Atarka's Command, 4 Boros Charm, 4 Lightning Bolt, 2 Lightning Helix, 4 Searing Blaze, 2 Skullcrack, 1 Thunderous Wrath.
I love that. I think that is so cool.
Everybody told him to cut it, and I kept telling him, I was like, don't cut that.
Don't cut that. So sweet. I mean, the original list he posted, I remember he posted a while back, he posted with 2, and there's no way you could pay me to play 2, but 1 is like magic. It is beautiful.
I love it.
Yeah.
4 Lava Spike, 4 Rift Bolt, and then 19 lands. So, about a third of your deck is lands. But I just don't like the odds of getting to that point.
No, not at all. I mean, there's so many times when I've kept that hand as a burn player and it just doesn't pay out for you.
So next up we have 1 Grim Lavamancer, 1 Lava Spike, 2 Lightning Helix, 1 Zergo. And then we have Waterfoot Hills, Bloodstained Mire, Mountain.
It's not the fastest, but I would keep it.
I would keep this hand, but I'm not exactly happy about it.
No, I mean, yeah, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but the grim Lavamancer will give you some reach, so that's not the worst.
Yeah,
especially with the fetches fueling that and the burn spells you already have.
Yeah, I lead with Zergo here, because
yeah, oh yeah, I would as well,
because I need that Zergo to be the leader in this, and the Grim Lavamancer will gain equity over the game, so you don't need to play it on turn 1.
No, not at all.
I would keep this hand. It's not the greatest. Obviously, we wish this mountain was basically like any other spell.
Right, yeah. If it was Rift Bolt, it'd be beautiful.
Yeah, Rift Bolt would be a great hand. Yeah, Rift Bolt would be great. You know, just anything, any spell really would be great in that situation. Next up, we have Wooded Foothills, Sacred Foundry, Wooded Foothills, Atarka's Command, Zergo, Searing Blaze.
Oh... I don't think I would keep this.
I would not keep it either. I think that, like, you just can't keep a 4-lander.
No, it's just, it's...
You just don't have enough gas in the game of Modern to get there.
Yeah, you count how much damage you have in hand. You have, theoretically, like, at best, probably, like, 3, 6, let's say a bump from Atarka's Command, 7, and then maybe 1 attack with Bellstriker, so, like, 9?
Yeah.
That's not a great hand.
That's not enough. That's enough. I would ditch that as well. Let's do one more. All right, we have Lightning Bolt, Lava Spike, Searing Blaze, Skullcrack, Boros Charm.
And Wooded Foothills. I would actually keep this.
I would keep this too. I would be scared to death.
Yeah, I wouldn't love it, but the fact that you have 9 damage with what you already have in hand is really, really great. You're one fetch land away from firing off Searing Blaze and activating your Boros Charm, so it seems really good.
Yeah, I mean, you have 16 damage without the Searing Blaze.
Right.
Which is pretty good in Modern.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it is a little bit greedy, but it's good.
Yeah. I mean, I would keep this. It's definitely not a Sneep, but I would keep it.
Yeah.
The thing you have to think about is how many plays can you make, and meaningful plays too. Right. Obviously, your biggest hope is that you can draw a second land so that you can start playing two spells in a turn, especially so that you can start leaving up Skullcrack.
Right.
Oh, and Boros Charm, depending. But yeah, I would keep that hand. So the next one we have is Monastery of Swift Spear, Boros Charm, Lightning Bolt, Lava Spike, Stomping Ground, Sacred Foundry, Wooded Foothills. I actually think this one is a snap keep.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you would have one, like, not the Wooded Foothills, and then you'd just be all gas.
But or not the Stomping Grounds, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't have an Atarka's Command in hand, so that's, yeah, absolutely fine. But yeah, the hand looks very good, very keepable. It looks like you're going to do a lot of damage really early, especially if they can't respond to your Swift Spear. I mean, it's just going to get in there.
Yeah, I love this hand. This is the kind of thing that I'm looking for in this. And I also really like mulliganing aggressively in aggro decks. Specifically, like, burn decks, because you're very much rewarded with it for the new mulligan roll.
Definitely, and I mean, I guess because I've been playing green-red aggro so much, I mean, if you don't have at least one or two one-drops, you're not getting anywhere in that game. It's just, I mean, the creatures are good, they're strong, but I mean, a turn three Wild Nacaudle is not a tenth as good as a turn one Nacaudle.
No, not even close. All right. So that's it. Man, this podcast so feels so different without, like, power rankings to set the stage with. Yeah. But let's go into... Should we just get in right into the training grounds?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So this week, we want to talk about something that hits kind of close to home for Manny, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
During our podcast meeting, Manny advocated for this. I told him no. I told him, no, we're not doing this yet. It was a training grounds that I had written down and that he wanted to do right away. He wanted to do it.
I feel like I have a lot to say on the subject. I mean, it's a big deal for me.
This week we want to talk about winning your in-store feature match. So the training grounds this week, in-store feature match. But let's take a step back. Manny, what is a regular feature match? Like, what is a feature match?
So a feature match typically is, you know, in what most of us identify with, is a match on camera where the match is being watched. It has announcers. It's something that's being shared with everybody.
Well, that's crazy. Does Oasis have feature matches?
They do not.
Oh, they don't. Then what are we talking about? Why would you have an in-store feature match?
Well, what you're talking about with an in-store feature match is when, you know, two guys will be having a particularly intense game of Magic, or, you know, and people are drawn to it. They want to come watch. They want to make decisions in their mind along with you while you're playing. They want to look at the board state. They want to get in your head and kind of see how each player is playing their game.
Yeah, there's a couple ways that this can happen. One of them is, like Manny says, you know, beating your rival, as we're going to start calling it. You know, beating that guy that you go to FNM to beat. You want to beat your Quentins, your Spencers, your Peets, your Brian Hollies, your Matt Klings, your Casey Bloodworths, you know, your Andrew Waldens, if you listen to LTO. You want to beat that guy that's, like, good at Magic, that keeps, like, topping PPTQs or going to Pro Tours. Like,
you want to get him.
You do. You want to get them. Like, a good example of this, Manny, you talked about how you've now beaten Casey, Matt, and Quentin in matches of Magic.
Yep.
Have you beaten me?
Not yet. It'll happen. And when it happens, everybody will know about it in the whole world.
You know, but it's pretty cool for you, right? It feels good.
Yeah, I mean, I consider all of those guys better players than myself. And I'm not coming down on myself. I'm not being rough. They're all very, very good, very talented Magic players.
But when you play in those matches, you feel it, right? You're like,
oh yeah, I windmill slam cards, and I'm like, answer that. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do about it?
It's fun for you to be in those situations, right? Yeah, absolutely. And it does feel like a raised level of pressure, and that's kind of what the feature match, quote unquote, is bringing to you in your store. This can happen in another way too. Like, let's say you're the last person to finish a match, or one of the last people, and people start hovering, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, we all love Magic. We all want to go watch people finish.
No one wants to just sit at their table and wait
until... And nobody twiddles their thumbs.
Yeah.
And if they do, what are you doing? Like, you're being a weirdie.
Yeah. You're either you're playing Magic or you're watching it. That's what you're there for.
but in all seriousness, like those matches, like a lot of people, it feels really intense. And the thing is that once you get into those situations, that happens because you're having an intense match. Typically, you're going into a game three pretty late. You've had like some pretty cool games of Magic.
Obviously, it's been very close.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, you wouldn't be going to time.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty intense situation that comes up. So why is it important that somebody, why would it be important for somebody to win a match like that? Why do you care if you beat, why are you going to tell the whole world the first time you beat me in a sanctioned match?
Because I haven't been able to do it. I think we played each other like at least 6 times in competitive environments and I have yet to win.
But why? Why do you care? Why is it more important that you beat me than you beat Joe Schmo?
Well, so 2 reasons, right? Number one is for my own ego. So it's like I'm validating myself, being like, yeah, you're good enough to beat Spencer. Like, you can do that now. You're at a place in your Magic career where you're going to play games with him and it's not just going to be a gimme. He's not just going to walk over you. And number two is it's a goal that I've set for myself that I know I am getting better at the game when I start beating better players.
Okay. What about those situations where you actually struggle and you've admittedly said so, where it's like the last person to finish and there's like 12 people hovering around you?
Oh my gosh. I can feel physical pressure on my shoulders when there's like 12 people crowded around me.
You know what? Quentin actually said the same thing on the podcast.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate it. It's the worst. I mean, I guess I've gotten over it quite a bit because I mean, every round of the last PPTQ I played in, people were watching me and there's pretty decent amounts of people around me, and I didn't let it bother me, it stopped bothering me, I guess.
So, obviously, it's all personal, right? These can be personal achievements that you find that you are becoming more successful when you get those feelings, when you feel that you won your quote unquote feature match. Because it's all in your head, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's recording these. These aren't actual feature matches.
Right.
It's something where you have felt like you have gained something by winning those matches. So,
what made those matches easier and almost, I mean, they're a breeze now, is I make it any other game. I just tune absolutely everything out. I don't acknowledge that anybody else exists. I just play the game. I concentrate on what my opponent's doing. I concentrate on what I'm doing. And I find that is so mentally taxing once you do it to, like, the best of your abilities that everything else just falls away.
Well, let's go into some... What are some important things to do? And the ones that we wrote down were staying in your game and blocking out your opponent. Just the things that you just said.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so important to, like... It's so funny that we know it's against the rules to, like, make comments on a game of Magic, right?
Right, yeah.
But
highly inappropriate.
But
have you ever done that?
Find ways around the rule by making, like, noises, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're all guilty of it. We've all done it.
Never. I have never once done that in my life.
I've done it. Especially when I watch Manny play. I'm like...
Yeah, I can testify to that. It's like... infuriating. I just
want you to go away. But in all seriousness, it's not like... Sometimes these people are not doing it on purpose.
Sure.
And, like, sometimes they don't even make a noise, right? If I'm standing behind your opponent and I see you make a play, and, like, my demeanor changes,
right,
and it's not audible, that's not, like, me breaking the rules, right? That's what I'm saying. It's not always against the rules of, like... But the thing is you can't look at the person that's watching you play Magic. Because the biggest reason for this... is inside of your game, you have more information than the people watching your game. They may, like, feel like they have all the answers.
Yeah.
But they weren't there during the sequencing of plays of your opponent and...
Sure.
Inside the game. Because it's very different when you're in the seat holding the cards.
Right.
So it's pretty important to be in that game, to be in that mode of just only looking at what's going on around you. So, ignoring people around you will help you... with things like this. Tapping your mana wrong. How often do you tap your mana wrong because you're not paying attention to your match? I mean, probably a lot of the time it's the only reason that would happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't pay attention to other people's matches. But, I mean, paying attention to other people
could definitely cause you.
Yeah, to do I've that. Definitely done that. You know, someone asks you, "Oh, what game are you on? What? Who's up a game? This, that, the other? You want some pizza?" And it's just like, just shut up. Just leave me alone.
But also, do you want some pizza?
Right, yeah. And it's like, oh, no thank you. And then, you know...
But work. Also, then you're mad that we didn't bring you pizza.
I never asked for pizza.
No, I think it's important to note that, like, something as simple as, hey, do you want pizza? Do you want a sandwich? I'm going to Subway.
Yeah.
Taco Bell. Beefy Crunch Burrito. Like, these all of these can things totally, can totally come up while you're playing your local game store.
Absolutely, and it's not
Do like, you want to go do shots in between rounds? Like, yeah.
And you're not going to hate your friends for looking out for you, but at the same time, you need to be able to stay focused on what you're doing and not let anything else get into your world.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to do things like miss triggers, mess up combat math, or even, like, pulling a Spencer and just letting this wrong spell resolve. Being inside of your match helps you with all of those things, right?
Right.
Being 100% focused on the here and the now is going to make it so all of these things aren't a problem for you in the end.
Indeed.
So, if other people can influence your decisions, even about saying something, like, the demeanor around them, mm-hmm. like, is that something that could cause a problem?
I mean, the thing that I like to keep in mind when seeing, you know, nonverbal cues from other people who are watching our match is that they don't know everything that's going on. They don't know how your opponent has been playing, how they tend to play, or even, you know, little poker tricks if they make certain movements with their face or hands right before they bluff a spell or this, that, and the other. I mean, chances are someone spectating knows little to nothing about what's going on compared to what you know about it. I mean, just because, let's say, someone is resolving an Ojutai, they go, oh man, they're totally going to win. And they may not know you have, you know, an Abzan charm and a murderous cut in a hand, and you're completely fine with that spell resolving.
In the end, like, one of the things that I like to think about in these situations, like, when I'm surrounded by a bunch of people and they're, like, nitpicking me and things like that, is, first of all, I'm playing at a local game store.
Sure.
Like, I'm literally playing Magic on 2nd and 2nd in Salt Lake City. Right. I'm not at, like, a convention center playing for thousands of dollars, and that's important to remember, like, because keeping in perspective that you want to win the match, but also remembering that Magic is a game and it needs to be fun for you, they're both pretty important things.
So I'm gonna step in here. I agree and disagree with you here, where I agree that you should view it as a game, right? It is a game, and it's something that we all have or have had fun doing at some point or another. But I think if you differentiate, you know, the pressure you feel at an LGS as opposed to the pressure you'd feel at, you know, a Star City Open, then you're kind of setting yourself up for failure. Because when you are in those featured matches under, you know, and thousands of people are watching, then it's like saying at that point, then it's okay to feel the pressure. And if you have,
hold on.
And if you have, you know, those stress coping mechanisms in place and they're practiced and they're good and they're solid, then that's not something you have to deal with ever again.
Okay. So yes, I agree with you completely.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is like everything can be simplified, right?
Yes.
So like, for example, I'm 0-3 in feature matches, on-camera feature matches.
Yeah.
I've literally never won one. And I've always been up a game.
Yeah.
On my own camera.
I watched you lose one. Well, and that might be another self-fulfilling prophecy type thing, right? Because you turned to me, you're like, oh, crap, I have a feature match. And then you went and promptly lost it.
Anyway. I mean, but on off-camera feature matches, I do really well.
Sure.
And the thing is that I have learned through high pressure situations such as, you know, the finals of an RPTQ, playing for 3-0 in a draft of the Pro Tour, and like feeling like a lot of pressure on myself.
Yeah, I mean
that, and these are all since my last feature match.
Okay.
That, and the way that I have overcome this is doing what you said, is like, I've 3-0'd a draft before. Yeah. Like, these guys are really good that I'm playing against. Like, they've all qualified for the Pro Tour.
Right.
But I've literally done drafts where, like, everybody's top-8'd a GP but me. So, like,
yeah.
It's not like...
Like, it's nothing.
It's not like these people all have that experience.
Right.
And so it's important to, like, to be able to simplify something. And maybe I'm oversimplifying, and that's where you're having the issue.
Sure, yeah. I can't think of that easy, those, like, in those terms, easily of black and white.
Yeah, and that could, I mean, you're right, it could set up a long-term failure for me, where, like, I'm playing for the win in the Pro Tour, and yeah, I'm like...
The stakes are raised.
Right. But the thing is that could I not simplify that to the time that, like, I want any match of Magic in my life?
So, yeah, you definitely could. I just think by the vernacular you were using, that it did not seem that way.
I think that's the point I'm trying to make, is that everything breaks down to the point where you could simplify it to something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
At totally. Some point, you made a correct play once.
Probably. I mean, if you ever played a land and then maybe like a one drop, you probably did the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, you did something right one time. Like, just do it a couple more times and you'll win this next match of Magic.
Yeah.
And that's how I approach it. And that doesn't mean it has to be the same thing for you. It could be different for you and me how we look at a feature match, quote unquote, in a store.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm overthinking a match because of the person I'm sitting across from or the situation I'm in.
Right.
And I certainly don't want to give a flying rat's behind about the people around me, because in the end, they don't really matter.
No. They're not sharing your victory or loss with you.
Yeah.
They've got their own games to play.
I mean, that's not always true, right? Like, when I qualify for a Pro Tour, when you qualify for, you know, a Pro Tour, like, the first time you qualify for your Pro Tour, who do you think is going to be happier, you or me?
Definitely me.
I don't know that that's true. Who do you think was happier when Quentin qualified for his first Pro Tour? Because he'll probably tell you it was me.
All right, sure.
Like, and the thing is, like, you share in your friend's success a lot, and that's why you build quote-unquote teams of Magic players.
Yeah.
Is because otherwise the game gets infuriating. But that's the thing, is that the first time that you beat me in Magic, you think I'm going to be mad at you for beating me at Magic? A little. But do you think I'm going to be like, good job, Manny, and be happy for you at the same time?
You definitely will be.
And it's important to note, like, where you're at in the situation, too. Because not every situation is going to be beating Spencer Howland for the first time, or for me, the first time that I beat Aaron Murinaka, because I've beaten that guy one time in one draft ever. And I've lost him, I think, 12.
Sure, yeah. I hear that similar story from everybody I know.
Yeah, I mean, he's a top Pro Tour, top A competitor, like.
Right.
And he's, like, the best match player in Utah. So, it's you, but the thing is that I need to, it's funny, because I actually beat him in a draft for testing for the Pro Tour. Was my first time ever beating him. And, like, it helps to, like, when I was sitting down against Aaron, we'll use that, let's say this is our in-store feature match.
Sure.
I do a draft with Sammy Batarsa, who has 3 GP top 8s.
Yep.
He's been to a bunch of Pro Tours. Travis Padilla, who qualified for the Pro Tour with me, it was his 3rd Pro Tour.
Uh-huh.
Aaron Murinaka has a Pro Tour top 8. Michael Callahan has been to like 3 Pro Tours.
Right.
And like, these are the people that I was testing for the Pro Tour with.
Yeah.
And these are the people I was drafting with going to the Pro Tour. And the thing is like, in those drafts, I had a very good record. I do wonder all of those drafts are better.
That's great.
And the reason that happened is because when I sat down, it was like, Aaron's not going to the Pro Tour. I am.
Yeah.
And the thing is like the time where you're going to beat me is the time where you're not going to care that you're playing against me.
Right. It's like, oh, this guy again. All right.
Exactly. And that's what happened, is it was like, I already know my deck's like way better than Aaron's. I've already seen him play his first round. I'm going to beat him.
Yeah.
And it was helpful. And whether it's Aaron or Pete for Manny, there's somebody that you want to beat that you feel that high pressure situation under. And I think that simplifying it does help, but maybe Manny's right. Maybe it's not about how much you simplify it. It's just about, I mean, for football, like, for example, they actually really, some people actually thrive in those high pressure situations and they like feed off of it.
Well, I think that's more of possibly, I think that might be a little bit more positive and easier to swallow, and I understand that, because I mean, I box a little bit and I really like that as well, but it's different when you have complete control of the situation. With a game like Magic, where there is so much variance, if you believe you have that kind of control over the situation, you will drive yourself insane.
Well, let's talk about the times that maybe we don't oversimplify it. So let's talk about something like using the match as a stepping stone, because obviously beating Aaron for the first time actually meant a lot to me. And obviously the times where you beat Quentin and Matt and Casey were important to you.
Oh, yeah. I, like, danced and yelled in their faces, I'm pretty sure. I
was so like, that's rude. Don't do that.
But, I mean, it's different because they're my friends, right? I would never do that to somebody who I respected that I didn't that I didn't hang out with.
Hold on. I would never do that to somebody I respected.
You don't know these guys. You don't know them like I do. That last comment was directly for you, the listeners. Okay, moving on.
So let's pretend that you do respect those people.
Sure. I could entertain that notion for a moment.
Obviously, you have respect for them. Otherwise, you wouldn't actually want to beat them so badly.
Right. I wouldn't. Yeah, and I wouldn't talk so highly about them.
Yeah. So how does the first time that you beat Casey Bloodworth make you feel better? How do you use that to beat Quentin Pierce?
I mean, it just lets me know that I am capable of those things, that I can do those things, that I am well within, like, it's within the realm of possibility to beat players that I think are better than myself.
Would you say that you won your first FNM before you won your first, quote, in-store feature match?
Absolutely.
So how does that happen?
I mean, with FNMs, I guess it's just, it feels like a very low pressure situation. When you, like, at the time I was playing at a very small LGS, there's maybe 8 of us. Tops 12 of us every week that would show up, you know, and we all knew each other, we all knew what decks we were playing, and it just wasn't any big deal. Maybe you'd have one or two buddies come by, but certainly not anybody that you didn't know.
How else do we use this as a stepping stone? How do you feel the first time that you beat Quentin Pierce?
Surprised was the first one, and then accomplished. I mean, it felt very good. Like I said, all those guys I feel like are much better at Magic than me, but sitting down across from them, I wouldn't feel nervous. I wouldn't feel anxious because I've done it and I know I can do it again.
It's actually, for the listeners of the podcast, we actually talked about, there was like, I think 3 weeks in a row on the show where either Quentin or myself, when we were doing the podcast, just the two of us, gave shoutouts to Austin Geltz. We were just like, he's getting so much better at Magic. He's improving. Like, I believe he beat Quentin for the first time one of those weeks.
Yeah.
And then like, 3 weeks later, he actually qualified for the Pro Tour. So that's using that as a stepping stone, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that's a big game. Where,
I mean, definitely. Quentin's queued for the Pro Tour twice now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hot. That's money.
I mean, it's just kind of small potatoes, right? Because
I don't think so. Because by beating someone that's queued for the Pro Tour several times, you know that you are just as good. Like, you know that you can... No,
that's not true.
Well, I think so. That's how I would take it.
You could use it as you're improving, but I don't think that, like, saying that because this one time that I beat a Hall of Famer, that I'm as good as a Hall of Famer.
That's fair. Okay, I definitely see what you're saying. But, I mean, in terms of, you know, things that you could accomplish, by beating somebody who has accomplished those things, then you are capable of accomplishing those things, too. Is what I'm saying.
So would you say that the more times that you've been in an in-store feature match, the easier it's gotten?
Oh, 100%.
Weird. It's like you gained experience points and leveled up.
Yeah.
It's like...
Just like a Pokemon.
Exactly like a Pokemon. It's actually funny that, like, you know, we actually did a podcast on BrainTapped, and I think that he might have said the same thing on this one, where we did it with PV, where he was like, Magic is not like an RPG where you gain experience points and suddenly you get better or something.
Yeah.
And I love PV. He's like my favorite player of all time.
Yeah.
Everybody who knows me knows that. But I actually just completely disagree. I feel like Magic is exactly a game like an RPG where you get IRL like experience points and you get better at Magic because of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, just the more you repeat something, right? The more like mechanical and the more...
Now, the difference, and it is important to note that I think the point of what he was actually trying to say is there's not like a moment where you're like, ding, leveled up, or like you ate a red mushroom and got bigger.
Sure, yeah.
Like, those moments don't actually happen. Like, that they just don't. That's not a thing that... In fact, when you listen to this podcast and you listen to a training grounds, you have to implement a training grounds a certain number of times before your brain will actually learn it. And I think that's what PV was trying to say.
Sure.
And the same thing is true of these feature matches. Like, the first time that you beat Pete or Brian or whoever it is that you beat, or the first time that you win a high-pressure situation where 12 people are watching you, or 13 or 20 or 100 or however many people it is, you're not going to if you are nervous then, you're not going to not be nervous next time.
Right.
You have to do it enough times where...
You just won't notice. One day you'll notice a crowd around you after you're done playing, and you'll be like, oh man, I like... that didn't bother me. Like, I didn't even notice.
Yeah, and it's important to, like, to look back and... That's why the simplification, I think, is helpful, but not always necessary. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so I definitely think that, you know, you're on the right track of what you're saying, and I believe everything you're saying. But, I mean, I think, for me, what I would advocate the most as far as, you know, being under pressure or, you know, being intimidated by your opponent or any of these things, it's exactly like the very first time you kiss a girl, right? You're like 13, 14 years old. You're terrified. You're scared. You've never done it before. The
first time you kissed a girl was 13?
I was just throwing out an age, but yes, I was.
You watched me kiss girls in elementary school.
Good for you, man. I wasn't a little, you know, 7-year-old slut. Okay. So, the very first time you kiss a girl, you're terrified. You don't know what you're doing. But, I mean, you know, you do it, and you do it for, theoretically, like, the rest of your life. Or kiss whoever, right? Boy, girl, whatever. It doesn't matter. But, like, now, I mean, I kiss my girlfriend, and it's not even, like, a thing. It's not even, like, a, you know, like, there's no association with that, like, fear and distress that I had when I was a kid.
Yeah, I think that comparing it to my first date might be a pretty big deal. Because, like, or the first kiss, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, like, the moments leading up to that seem infinity.
Oh my gosh, it's like time almost stops.
I mean, it's part of the excitement too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because
once you get that kiss, you feel like you're on top of the world.
Right.
Once you win that in-store feature match, it's like you just got your first kiss. Yeah,
all your friends just watched you, you know, dominate your opponent. You did it. You played superbly.
Probably shouldn't talk about domination and kissing at the same time.
Oh, shut up. Gross. So, you crushed your opponent, and, like, you played so well, and you got him, you know, you did something, some ingenious, amazing play, and everyone is there to recognize it, and there's not another feeling like it.
It's not, and it's funny. If our girlfriends heard us, or our significant others heard us talking about, like, comparing the first time that we kissed them to magic, they might actually flip a table.
I mean, I think Nicole would just be mad that I've kissed anybody else ever. So there's that. She'd be like, no, that's never happened.
I think that's a really good comparison, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the more you do it, the more of a big deal that it isn't.
Well, let's wrap this up with, I mean, we're not going to get better than, like, comparing a feature match to a kiss. Whether, you know, you're kissing your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your partner, whoever it is that you're kissing.
It raises a lot of issues as to how we feel about magic that I'm not comfortable with right now, though. Just got a little too real, guys.
But let's talk about some things that you can be doing that are going to be really helpful. And so the first thing that I put down is shuffle your deck. The number of times where I, like, would see who my opponent was, like, go sit down, just, like, rip, like, you know, jam shuffle twice, hand them my deck, without actually, like, legitimately shuffling my deck. And then, like, one of these matches was too many, and I'd be like, especially, and then, like, my hand looks really bad. I'm like, oh, I'm so unlucky.
And then,
crush shuffle twice, hand them the deck back.
You just remember that you played, you know, 38 minutes in two very long games where you had a lot of lands out, and you did not take the time you needed to shuffle.
Yeah, I would, first of all, I would also recommend just shuffle the same way you always shuffle. For me, I always pile shuffle, then riffle shuffle, then smash shuffle, then, you know, riffle shuffle, then smash shuffle, then present my deck.
Didn't you get everyone calling a judge on me for pile shuffling in eights?
You were pile shuffling in game 3 of a match that you were, like, 20 seconds away from tying.
I shuffle the way I shuffle.
No, you don't do that.
All right, I'm going to shuffle the same every time. You just said it. I got you trapped.
No, you didn't. Anyway, you're taking away from the podcast.
Sorry.
but just shuffle your deck. Like, the number of times I've seen people just, like, see that they're paired against, like, you know, someone like Quentin, who they're afraid of at, like, certain stores that Quentin has a reputation at. They've been like, oh, Quentin Pierce, like, here's my deck. And he's like, you just shuffled, like, you just riffled that twice. Like, don't you actually want to shuffle your deck? And the thing is like, that's really bad for you.
Yeah,
remember to shuffle.
I mean, that's true, but they could also have been shuffling in between rounds as well.
They could, but...
I do that. I'm like...
Shuffle your deck, guys. Yeah. Like, it's... We play Magic, right? And there was actually a time where I took a break from Magic, where I was in another city, and I was with a girl. This was before I started dating my wife. And I actually asked for a deck of cards. And, like, while I was talking to the girl, I just started shuffling them. And she is like, she was actually impressed. She was like, how are you like shuffling without looking? And I realized then that like shuffling was actually just relaxing. Like, that's how we feel. We enjoy love magic, right? We love it.
And
shuffling is a direct, you've seen me shuffle just for no reason.
So, yeah, in between like rounds the semifinals, the finals, you'll just sit, you know, with your headphones in, and you'll just kind of hang out and relax, kind of not stare at the table, but have your eyes pointed at it, and then just shuffle and shuffle and shuffle.
I didn't even know this about myself, but I'm sure I've done it.
Oh, yeah.
he's like, no, you've definitely done it. And the thing is like, I think that that's important to note, is that shuffle your deck. It actually feels good. Like, it's not a hindrance for you to want to shuffle your deck at the beginning of the match against an opponent. It gives you time to think.
Yeah.
I mean, you have 3 minutes, like, use them.
And if your deck is not shuffled, you are actually doing something proactively helpful to counter variants, right?
Yeah, so you're exactly. Like,
you're doing the most that you can do to make sure that takes the smallest part in your game.
Yeah. The other thing that I see a lot of people not doing during these in-store feature matches is talking to their opponent. Communication is key to a successful match of Magic. So an open conversation usually helps. It doesn't need to be small talk. It just needs to be an open line of communication. The thing is like, that's what judges tell you at the beginning of every REL tournament. They're like, talk to your opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in any kind of disagreement about rules, you know, the first thing you do is call a judge, no matter how nice your opponent is or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just the judge is there to protect, you know, the game.
Yeah, so it's pretty important to just keep that open line of communication, because in the end, like, whether it's small talk or just making sure that everything is happening appropriately, you're navigating your way through a match of Magic just like you would any other day. So don't be afraid to talk to the person across from you, because in the end, that open line of communication is more helpful to you than hurtful almost all the time.
Yeah, I actually love talking to my opponents. I'm a very friendly guy. I like to meet people for the most part. You know, I like talking to people. And I find that losing a match of Magic to, you know, someone who is nice or someone who I like is 1,000 times better than losing to someone who's, like, rude and offensive and someone who you, you know, dislike because they are rude to you.
Yeah. Next up, we have be patient and decisive. Be diligent in life totals, writing down cards that you can see during a discard spell, and make sure that you're making meaningful plays during the game by being diligent and understanding everything that's going on around you. You can't expect to win a match if you're not paying attention. If you have life totals wrong all the time, or you're not writing down cards after a discard spell or a taxing probe or things like that, like, you're just not maximizing your information. Don't be scared. Do things the right way. You've been taught. You've listened to this podcast for however many episodes you listen to it. We preach, you know, playing the correct way and doing things the right way. Do them. It's not any different playing against somebody like, let's say that you went to a pre-release and you were playing against Kai Buddha. Like, you're at a pre-release, dude. Like, just play the way you'd play against everybody else and just make sure you're doing things right.
Yeah, and then, I mean, get a signature after the round's over. No big deal.
Enjoy it, too. We've said it already on this podcast, but Magic is fun. You don't always get the opportunities to be in a situation where 12 people are watching you, 100 people are watching you, whatever the situation may be that you're in, playing against somebody who's been to the Pro Tour a lot of times. You know, they have 200 lifetime trophy points. You don't always get those moments.
No.
Relish them. Enjoy it. It's really fun.
Absolutely. I mean, those are experiences that you may not ever have again. And I mean, not being pessimistic, but how many times are you going to get to sit, you know, across from Owen Turtenwald or, you know, somebody amazing?
Yeah. I don't think that it's not a matter of anything, but in the end, why did you start playing Magic?
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a fun game. I'm not gonna say at the time, but it was a fun way to be creative. You know, design my own decks, to interact with people, but you know, just have good times with people I didn't know.
I think that we all were mesmerized, right? At one point, we were. I mean, I remember playing chess with you and Shaman. When we were younger.
Oh, man, we were real competitive
chess players. Yeah, we loved chess. When we were little kids, we loved chess. And then, like, we started playing Magic. And we didn't play a lot of chess games after that.
No. You know, like, the big old, like, before EDH was EDH, just like group little kid games.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I've already talked about some of the cards, Volshock, whatever, from Mirrodin when I was playing with Ryan and Jason Jackson, like back in the day. Like
Heedless One and Well Wisher, that was my jam.
Yeah, like Manny cast his first Dark Ritual into Dark Banishing in the same turn against me. Like,
yeah.
I just remember these great, insane games of Magic where, I mean, we all started for a reason, that the game is actually fun. That's the reason we play Magic. So enjoy the situation, enjoy the moment you're in. In the end, like, you are just playing a game that was actually designed for, like, childish people. Maybe it wasn't designed for children, but it was designed for people that are children at heart. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, how many times do our significant others just tell us that, like, oh my gosh, like, you're freaking out over a game?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I try to explain to my girlfriend, you know, why I have to spend $600 on four Tarmogoyfs. And it's a tough sale. it doesn't make sense.
But I hope that, like, just doing the little things, playing correctly, using it as a stepping stone, you know, just doing the little things and simplifying can all help you the next time you're in a situation where a couple people are over your shoulder or you're playing against that bad guy that you really want to freaking beat.
You'll get him. You just gotta keep playing.
You know, it's funny because, like, you would think that me having a positive record against Matt Kling, Casey Bloodworth, and Quentin Pierce, that I would be, like, no big deal when I sit across from them.
Sure.
I have winning records against all of those players.
Yeah.
They're still the guys that I want to beat the most. Because you want to beat your friends.
Oh, yeah. That's what it's all about.
And you know what? When you surround yourself with greatness, you have a lot more in-store feature matches. Yeah. So it just goes back to another one of our training grounds, specifically one we did with John Finkel. So
oh, sure.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say before we wrap this one up?
No, just, I guess, just remember, you know, if you are put on tilt because you believe your opponent is, you know, an excellent player, way better than you, or if you are pressured, you know, by being your in-store feature match and, you know, you're not used to all these people watching you and judging you all the time, I mean, just break it down into just little tiny steps. I mean, I'm not going to say it's just a game. It is just a game, but at that moment, it doesn't feel that way. It feels way more important, and you just have to focus on the basics, right? Playing your cards in the correct order, playing your lands correctly, tapping them correctly, just evaluating your board state every chance you get and making sure you play tight. You do those things, like, you'll be fine.
I have nothing else to say.
Yeah. Done.
All right. Don't forget, that's it. That's it for the training round. So let's move on to just wrapping up the podcast. Don't forget, you can join the clan by messaging myself on MTGO if I'm logged on at Spencer13Dev or Quentin Pierce at
Earthstripe, URTHSTRYPE.
You know something? I actually was going to log on to Quentin's account and play some matches today with some of the decks that he has on his account, and Moto wouldn't launch for me.
Oh yeah, you were saying that.
I was like furious. And then I just want to give an early shout to MTG Worth. He's like basically in charge of MTGO at Wizards. Uh-huh. And he actually tweeted directly at me, like gave me like the steps. I thought I had checked my computer for Windows updates, and there was 32 available.
Oh.
And then, in the end, I actually just decided to update to Windows 10.
Yeah.
Because I was told that it would actually work still. So, shout out to him. But yeah, message either myself or Quentin if we're online, and we'd be happy to add you to the clan. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, you can check out Oasis Games at mtgoasis.com, oasisgamesslc.com, or, there's another one. oasisgamesslc.com, mtgoasis.com. Or OasisCCG.com.
Oh, I didn't know that was one.
And then, we're exactly like $2 away from our next Patreon goal, sorry about that. We're at $98 in pledges, so the next goal is at $100, and it's just Google Hangouts with me and Manny, and maybe Casey or Matt if they want to join us one of those days, you know, whoever's available.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys want to forego, you know, like one cup of coffee and donate like $2 a month, you would literally be helping change our worlds.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot of money. We're literally like $2 in pledges away from doing a Google Hangouts again. For those who have joined us in the past when we had Google Hangouts, we're bringing them back. And it's a really cool goal. It's basically Manny will be writing the shows for those, where Manny will write down the things that we'll interact with the fans with. And yeah, it's going to be really cool. It's for, it's, so we're pretty close to that. You do have to be a 10 level supporter or higher, but we also invite, if we don't have enough people for the hangout, if they're not available, then we actually invite other patrons first, and then we invite, other listeners of the show to get to the goal that we want. So just becoming a $2 patron will get you next in line to join those Google Hangouts. So, and we could change it too. So, I mean, we can invite all patrons and things like that. So yeah. We're pretty close to that goal, so check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/ccmtg. Manny, where can people find you?
They can find me on Facebook. My legal name is actually not Manny, it's Manuel, M-A-N-U-E-L, last name Meraz, M-E-R-A-Z. You can find me on Facebook, friend me, message me, talk to me, join our closed Facebook group that is my favorite. I check it every day. I love those guys. Or you can find me on Twitter. I'm going to change my name here soon to make it easier to find me, but my current
handle probably just there, Manny_CCMTG or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Well, I'll let you know, okay? Don't hold your breath. But right now it's ENTRPNRFR.
You have like no podcast Twitter followers.
I do. I have a few.
You have like 3.
Yeah. I mean, that's like
a Quinn lot. Went from like 7 followers to like 130 by being on this podcast.
What can I say? People are intimidated by my greatness.
People don't like you.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding.
Whoa. Way to ruin my day, dog.
Dude, people love you. They've said these last couple episodes are great. Come on.
I know. Somebody said, I think it was Brian. He said our last episode was like the best. And that gave me, that put me on cloud
we got 9. A lot of really great feedback this week. So
yeah.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. Spencer Howland is just from my family. Don't try to add that one. And yeah, I'd be happy to speak to anybody about Magic all the time. I got a bunch of messages to look at decklists last night, so I did that while I was in bed. I'm happy to give you feedback. If it's short and you want more, just let me know, because sometimes I'm actually just laying in bed typing to you. So
yeah, I mean, this we get around to it.
Yeah.
We do.
I answer everything that anyone sends to me ever. So even if it seems like I'm not paying attention, like just say, hey, I'd love like more in-depth feedback, and I'd be happy to answer it even more. But I always give a response when somebody asks me a question. So feel free to message me all the time. Shoutouts. Huge shoutouts this week. The Facebook group was pretty great this week. We got some great feedback. Starting with... that's just shout out. Another one. but yeah, first of all, don't forget that you can get your shirts. There's 9 days left. So when this comes out, there will be either 8 days or 7 days left. So like one more week to get your Constructed Criticism t-shirts. It's teespring.com/constructed-criticism.
Yeah. And then, so be forewarned, the shirts do come with sleeves, but you can easily remove them. It's, like, not anything.
And he's not talking about magic sleeves, either. You're so dumb. All right. But, yeah, like, for me, shout-outs this week to Brian, who he always gives, like, pretty harsh feedback.
I liked it. I loved it.
But it means a lot to us that we have people that care enough about the podcast. Ryan also gave some great feedback this week. Eric Grayson gave some great feedback this week. People are legitimately, like, going in depth and giving us thoughts on their show and how we can improve it.
Yeah.
And it just means a lot to us. So thank you so much.
We appreciate it. It lets us know that you guys actually care.
Yeah. And if you're wanting like an in-depth look at the show and you're in the Facebook group, you can look at my response to Ryan's comment. It's a long one where I literally went in depth and explained.
Oh my gosh, that looks like a book.
Have you not read this?
No.
I told you to read this.
Yeah, I glanced through it. I didn't see that, like, letter.
Yeah, I wrote basically open-ended, like, exactly what goes on behind the scenes of the show to let you know how constructive criticism works and how it ticks and how what my job on the show is and then what I give to my co-hosts. So if you're interested in that, shout out to Ryan, shout out to Matt, who also gave some feedback, like everybody who gives feedback to the show. It's what makes us hashtag always improving.
Yep.
So thank you so much. Shout out to Manny.
Yes, my shout out is to Paul. Paul D, thank you so much just for always being active on the Facebook group and always talking to us and like giving us your input and asking us things and letting us ask you things. Like you're so interactive and you know, you're just always, you've always got something to say in like a really great way. And you know, just thank you.
Yeah. Final shout outs. Cause I actually have a couple more. First of all, it's my wife's and mine anniversary yesterday. So shout out to her. And then also like, don't forget that you can find the podcast at ConcertedCriticism.com, now on YouTube, on OasisGamesLC.com, as well as MTGCast.com. And then you can also join the Constructive Criticism Facebook group that we keep talking about. Once the Patreon page gets bigger, like there will be a lot of it. I hope that there will be a lot of interaction on that. But yeah, right now, if you want to be a part of the community, I think we had like 6 people join the Facebook group this week. And we went from like 50, like nothing members to 63 this week.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, 6 new members just this week. So if you're interested in joining the group, like it's growing and people are talking about Magic. Every day I try and post.
Yeah, that's like all we do. So if you like talking about Magic, that's the place you need to be.
We have some like things that we suggest, like Modern Mondays, Ticket First Tuesdays, Wacky Wednesdays, Think About It Thursdays, Flashback Fridays, Sealed Deck Sundays, giving people Saturday to play in their PPTQs. So we definitely like encourage people to get better at Magic through communication. So that's a great place to interact with other fans and things like that. All right. Hashtag, would that be good? What is hashtag, would that be good, Manny?
Hashtag, would that be good is, I guess you could call it a program. I mean,
it's a Twitter outreach program.
Yeah, but I mean, that sounds so bureaucratic. Just like someone's paying us obscene amounts of money to answer people on Twitter, and that's not it. It's another way for us to interact with you guys.
Yeah, if you don't have Facebook, hashtag would that be good is a great way to interact with us.
Yeah, I mean, a great way to make jokes, too, because, I mean, hashtag would that be good is, can be used a variety of comical
ways. Usually hashtag would that be good makes me laugh. People really enjoy it. They've requested that we create hashtag would that be good shirts. I've actually started in designs of a hashtag would that be good hoodie to get hoodies out to the listeners if they're interested in those. But let's start with Joel. Let's make sure that we're live, though, because I want to make sure we get everybody in there. So Joel says, in your opinion, which budget modern deck should I build next? Hashtag would that be good. We have Living End, no Verdant Catacombs, Blue-Red Storm, no Tarns, Blue-White Emiria Sun Titan, or Red-Green Scapeship. So I would not build Storm right now. I actually think that deck's bad right now. I know that if Casey was here, he would tell you that he's like literally played Blue-Red Storm without Tarns and done well with it. So don't listen to him.
Yeah,
I mean, you could literally play this deck with like fetch lands in standard now, like with like the blue fetch lands, mm-hmm. and you'd be totally fine.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to your mana base wouldn't be the strongest, but be pretty close. Like
yeah, like you have close. Enough like cheap fetch lands within standard that you could actually probably do this. So one of my favorite decks is Living End, but I couldn't dream of playing Living End without the correct mana base because your mana is so taxed.
It's aggressive.
So I didn't vote for that on your Twitter poll. I wrote it for Red Green Scapeshift because it's cheap, and it doesn't cost like Red Green Scapeshift is doing really well right now. Actually,
my vote would be for Blue White Emiria Sun Titan because those are some super sweet cards.
Sun Titan's a cool card, but Red Green Scapeshift plays 4 Primeval Titans in it.
I don't. You've played that card so much, it's soured for me. I like.
What?
Yeah, dude. I mean, just every time you're like, oh, find 2 lands. Oh, I'll get 2 more. I just like, I roll my eyes like into the back of my skull and can't.
But then they die.
Yeah. Yeah, then I die. Then I die. It's just why I don't like it.
I don't like it because I keep losing to it.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think that Red Green Scapeshift also on this list happens to be the best of these decks. So that's why I picked that.
Sure.
Yeah. Soured Primeval Titan for you. That's hypocrisy. I said at Trav says that Gamer Monkey isn't funny. Hashtag would that be good? So I did a podcast with Aaron Muradaka. He's the Pro Tour Top 8 competitor we were talking about earlier on the cast. He's like literally I think the best player in Utah.
Yeah, I think Matt and Casey have referred to him as like a monster.
Yeah, he's insane. And he actually wrote the show notes for the show. He just sent them to me one day. He's like, here's some stuff. And I was like, well, okay, that's awesome. But he titled it Limited Resources Jedi Mind Tricks. The show is called Limited Time Only. Limited Resources is the other show.
The super famous super
Jedi. And then when I mentioned the mistake to him, he said, oh, I wanted to be on with Marshall and LSV.
He got you good.
He thought he was on a different show, allegedly. But yeah, so I thought that was pretty funny. A little thing I call deck building. Hashtag going to be good. This format is so fun to brew in. We see Casey playing some really sweet cards. He was playing things. He was playing Wild Slash, Seeker of the Way, Treasure Cruise, Snapping Gnarled, and Mantis Rider all in the same deck.
So you guys can call it sweet, and I will call it nonsense. He calls it Jeskai Blue, or no, Jeskai Green. I call it nonsense.
I think that this deck is sweet, and I also love Treasure Cruise. And I also think that this format is very open to brewers, and people are not doing it enough. I think you can win with what you want to win with in this standard format, and I love that.
I would agree with that. There's, yeah, the card pool is so diverse right now.
And your mana base makes it so that you play, like, yeah, you probably have to play Mantis Rider or Savage Knuckleblade or Mantis Rider or, you know, Butcher of the Hoarder. Like, you have to play powerful three-color cards.
Yeah.
Like, Mardu Charm has seen a lot of play this week, and that's okay. Like, you can play four-color decks. Like, brew your favorite four-color combination. Everybody has a color they don't like. Like, I hate white. I'm really excited to play Teemer Black. I've never gotten to do that before, and I'm really excited to get to do it now. So, brew. Enjoy the format like Casey's saying. Like, have fun with it. It's really sweet. I love four-color decks. Also, we just aren't going to get them for very long. We're going to get them for, like, 6 months.
Yeah, we're going to all remember how fun it is to play Chaplains.
Yeah, like, we all get to remember in, like, a few months, like, do you remember that time where we could play four colors? Yeah, nice two-color deck, dum-dum.
Yeah, isn't it sweet how this life, or this land gives me something innocuous?
Yeah.
This tap land.
So, West says, one solemn,
you slight solemn again by putting it under...
Oh, he's responding to the, he's responding to last week's hashtag, would that be good, where I tweeted about the top 8 magic from Channel Fireball. I didn't put anything anywhere, West. That was all from channelfireball.com. Second of all, you have to redeem your $0.25 store credit by taking it out of Manny's account when Manny's working. He said he would donate it to you. I'm going to see him
today, actually, in like an hour, so I can do that.
Yeah, you have to ask Manny for your 25 cents. He's the one donating it to you for insulting him. Duh. Patrick says, also for what it's worth, I don't think top should be banned. Other than top enablers should go. At Spencer, at Manny, hashtag with
the beginning. Yeah, Patrick actually he tweeted at us a lot for this, and I think he's right. I think out of that, well, I guess touching briefly on this, right? Out of those legacy cards, I think counterbalance is a problem.
Yeah, I can understand where Patrick is coming from, and he actually does a legacy podcast, if you haven't listened to it.
Oh, nice.
It's called Leaving a Legacy. I actually had a video series called Leaving a Legacy never got posted on YouTube, where I did my own, like, single-person magic podcast. So it was really funny when Patrick told me he was posting it, I was like, I actually had a video series called this that never got posted. I did like 3 videos for it. Oh, wow. So it was really funny. Which is even funnier because I had to change the name of my video series because I started a video series called Making Magic, but I didn't realize that Mark Rosewater did a column called Making Magic. So it's all just like, we all think of these clever names, but they're all just like, used up.
Hashtag, would that be good? And it's exactly. Like, yeah, it'd be great. That's why somebody has it.
Yeah, in fact, Constructed Criticism was the name of a Todd Anderson column like years ago.
Oh.
Go figure.
You can't take it back, right?
Oh, no. We got this.
Okay.
if
you're listening, Anderson, don't even try.
I didn't know that when I created the podcast. I was actually at a bar with Todd Anderson, and he told me that.
Oh, okay. So he's fine. He knows.
Yeah, he knows. But yeah, I understand where Patrick is coming from, but no, I think that top is the one that's hard for judges to, like, police, and that's the one that should be banned. And the reason that I think it should be banned is not because I think it's oppressive or I think that it's a problem. I understand what Patrick is saying, that, like, decks that don't play counterbalance don't have to top all the time.
Right.
But the fact is that they can, and they can do it without consequence, because you, like, technically anytime your opponent does anything, you could want to change the top of your deck, right?
Yeah, I mean...
So for that reason alone...
You could top just all the time,
right? Yeah, because something happened, you could want the top card of your deck to change. And that's a valid reason to activate the card, which makes it so that you always have a valid reason to activate it, which means that it would be impossible to police if people were slow play.
I see what you're saying. That makes sense.
But I agree with him that, like, in other decks they don't do that.
Right.
But the fact is that they could do that without penalty.
Right.
And for that reason, I stick with my stance that I do think top should go. But I appreciate Patrick keeping it an open line of conversation and pushing the conversation forward. And he has very valid points. So thank you, Patrick. And also check out Leaving a Legacy, his podcast. At Kiora's follower, that's the Matt. He's actually done an episode of LTO with me, so shout out to him. He says, assuming Amulet doesn't get the Banhammer, I think this could be a nice addition. Hashtag would that be good. New spoiler, Crumbling Vestige is a land that enters the battlefield tap. When it enters the battlefield, add a mana of any color to your mana pool, and it taps for colorless.
That seems so good.
I can't decide about this land.
Really? I think this, if you wanted to, this could see play in, like, every deck.
You have to be able to do something with the mana that turn.
Right, I'm saying, like, you're building your deck to meet certain conditions. I'm not saying you're playing, like, Atarka aggro and you're just...
I'm not saying this card could not see play. This card is definitely playable in some kind of deck.
Yeah.
I just don't know how I feel about the card.
Oh, okay. Like, is as far as... Like, as its fairness, its balance.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And it could see play in Amulet Bloom. I mean, it makes two mana when, like,
yeah,
that's the turn comes into play in that deck. So, very interesting card. So, yeah, definitely something to keep an eye out for.
Also, I hope Amulet Bloom gets banned.
Oh, man, me too.
It's just too fast.
3-1-1 at my first GPT this weekend. Lost round one in top eight. Has anyone have any advice for Burn versus Jundin Junk? Hashtag would be good. At Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
I like that you... I mean, it's been... Yeah. I love the running jokes on this podcast.
It's good, yeah.
You know, one of them being... This one is actually different, though, because it wasn't tweeted at me.
Mm.
So maybe we're expanding this running joke.
That's right. He wants to know what I have to say.
That's
about
right.
It
it's
now.
Not just to me. So the matchup against Jund has changed a lot, where it used to be pretty favored, I feel like, in Burn's favor. But we've done a lot. Jund has done a lot to change that. Cheaper spells, for one. But there's a lot of really cheap spells now.
I mean,
Jund's mana curve has gone way down.
I still think the Burn versus Jund matchup is very favorable. I think it's bad against Junk, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that both have done a lot to improve that matchup, because it was at one point, I think, really bad for both of them. My advice to you would be to sideboard against how you feel like your opponent is likely to sideboard.
Next level.
Yeah, I would advise...
So how would you do that?
I mean, I would have... For Paul, he doesn't... I mean, he only has 2 Skullcracks and 4 Darkest Command in the main.
Yeah.
I would go up to the full 8.
In the side? That would definitely be really good.
Yeah, and I would leverage that against things like Siege Rhino, Kitchen Finks, if they're playing that, or... even things like Austin and Bailoff, I would make sure to leverage what I can against those decks. So, that's my advice is that you need to get to the level where you need to make sure that you're playing against what you think they're going to be playing, because that's how they're going to start beating you.
If you're not ready for their sideboard, then their chances go up quite a bit.
Yeah, you also need to prioritize Eidolon in that matchup because it's like your best card.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So things like that. Those are things that are going to help you out. Ordering my shirt today. Thanks at CCMTG. My wardrobe is hashtag always improving.
that made me giggle.
Yeah.
Very hashtag hard really good. Before we started the
Which
show.
Which is funny because my response to him was, this made me LOL. And then Manny walked in, saw this on the screen as I was preparing the computers for the show. And he actually laughed out loud too. So
it's so good.
It was pretty funny. Man. So that's it for hashtag whether that'd be good. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
All right. Bye everyone.